Joshua chapter 2, starting verse number 1. And Joshua the son of Nun sent out of Shittim two men to spy secretly, saying, go view the land, even Jericho. He sent spies to Jericho. Joshua was the leader of the Israelites at this time. And they went and came into an harlot's house. You guys probably figure out what a harlot is. And named Rahab and lodged there. So they're sleeping over at this lady's house. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, there came men in hither tonight of the children of Israel to search out the country. So the king had found out what was going on, that there's two spies that came into the land. And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab. Somehow he found out that this lady Rahab was housing these two spies. And so he sends her over to the palace to where he is. And this is what he says to her. Bring forth the men that are come to thee, which are entered into thine house, for they be come to search out all the country. And the woman took the two men and hid them and said thus to the king, there came men unto me, but I don't know where they are. And it came to pass about the time of shutting of the gate when it was dark that the men went out. Whither the men went, I don't know. Pursue after them quickly, for you will overtake them. She lies to him. She says to the king, they left the city already. They're, I don't know where they are. Really, they're staying with her. Okay, verse number 6. But she had brought them up to the roof of the house and hid them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order upon the roof. And the men pursued after them, the spies. They pursued after the spies the way to Jordan under the ford. So they leave the city, thinking that's where they are. And as soon as they which pursued after them were gone out, they shut the gate. And before they were laid down, she came up unto them, the two spies, upon the roof to meet them. And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, the city she lives in, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when ye came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Now, therefore, I pray you, just please, swear unto me by the Lord, your Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that you will also show kindness unto my father's house and give me a true token, and that you will save alive my father and my mother, and my brethren, and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. And the men answered her, our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. If you keep your mouth shut, then we'll keep you safe. And it shall be, when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee. All right, so that's that snippet of a very broad story that's going on, and that's from Rahab the harlot's perspective. Now, let's look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11, starting in verse number 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. Now, it's interesting that her name is listed in Hebrews chapter 11. This is commonly known as the Hall of Faith. So if I told you that Hall of Fames were for exceptional people, none of you would disagree with that. If I told you that Hall of Fames, like the NBA or the NFL or the Major League Baseball, the Hall of Fames that they have are for some of the best players in those particular leagues, you guys would say, well, obviously that's true. You would say, well, look at the MLB. You have people like, I don't know too many baseball players, but people like Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig or Ty Cobb. You have the NBA. You have the NFL. You have Emmitt Smith in the NFL. You have Troy Aikman. You have some people like John Elway. Some of these amazing players that are in these Hall of Fames because they were exceptional players. They were better than exceptional players. They were legendary players, some of these guys. Babe Ruth, this guy's 150 years ago or 100 years ago. We still remember this guy's name. That's how good at his sport he was. And he's in this Hall of Fame. You go to the Sunset Boulevard or Hollywood someplace. I can't remember exactly where it is. But there's the Walk of Fame for all the so-called famous actors. And there's actors like Clint Eastwood. He has a star on the Walk of Fame. There's actors like Audrey Hepburn or Bing Crosby or shout out John Elway. Or not John Elway, John Wayne, the Duke. Some of these guys were exceptional actors. So if I was to say to you this morning that Hall of Fames are meant for people who are very famous, people who did exceptional things, people who did extraordinary things, you guys would all agree with that. So when we come to Hebrews chapter 11, which is commonly known as the Hall of Faith, which is where a lot of the superstars of the Bible are, they're talked about in this chapter. Moses, Isaac, Jacob, you got people like Abraham, Joseph, you got some famous guys who did extraordinary things. And then you come to Hebrews chapter 11, verse number 31, to Rahab. A woman, number one, a non-Jew, number two, and someone who didn't really do anything. We just read the extent of her life. What the Bible gives us about the extent of her life, we just read that. Nothing really too extraordinary. Nothing really too out of the ordinary. Nothing. She didn't do any miracles. She didn't part the sea like Moses did. She wasn't the prime minister of Egypt like Joseph was. She wasn't the father of a nation like Abraham. She wasn't sacrificed almost on an altar like Isaac was. Some of these prophets, the great prophets of the Old Testament, she didn't do anything great, yet she's listed in Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Faith, as many people call it. Why? That's the question. Why is she in this? So let me give you some background, and maybe we'll understand by the time we get to the end of this, why she's in Hebrews chapter 11, verse number 31. The Hebrew people had been released from Egypt, and they had been wandering throughout the desert there for about 40 years. After that 40 years, they come up to what God called the Promised Land. He was going to give them the Promised Land. That was the land that Israel now resides in, modern-day Israel now resides in. That was the Promised Land that God had promised them. And in fact, actually, it was a lot bigger than the land they have now. It was from really the west or the eastern side of Egypt all the way to the western side of Iraq and all of Saudi Arabia and all of where Israel is now and Syria and Lebanon and Jordan. All of that was the Promised Land that God had promised to the Israelites. Obviously, they don't occupy all of that. They occupy some of that today, of that Promised Land. So God promises them the Promised Land. And he says this is going to be a land filled with, flowing with milk and honey. It was going to be a very prosperous land, a land that had a lot of nutrients in the soil, a land that you could build up and you can have a great nation there. And so they're coming to this Promised Land, but they have to conquer it as they're going. And God's the one who conquered a lot of these lands and these cities for them. So they come up to this city called Jericho that they were supposed to conquer as they're claiming the Promised Land that God had given them. And the thing about this land called Jericho, this city called Jericho, it was legendarily, if that's a word, it was a walled city. And the walls around this city were something of legend because it said that two chariots could sit side by side and drive across this wall on top of it. That's how wide this wall was. Massive wall. Everyone thought it was impregnable. Everyone thought this was like Helm's Deep in Lord of the Rings. You guys probably don't even know what that is. But everyone thought this was like, you can't get through this wall. This is like a huge wall. Everyone thought we're safe in this wall. But they were going to come to this city called Jericho, and they were going to conquer this city. And so what Joshua does, the leader of Egypt at this time, he was the leader after Moses. Joshua, he says sends two spies to sneak into the city to assess the land, assess the wall, and see if anything could be done about conquering this city. So he sends two spies in. These spies obviously go to probably a really shady district where they could, you know, kind of go unseen. And they come to this harlot's house named Rahab, and she houses these two men. And she says to these two men, "I'm going to keep you here." And then the king finds out about it. The king finds out about it. And look what happens next. Joshua chapter 2. "And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, Bring forth the men that are come to thee, which are entered into thy house, for they be come to search out all the country. And the woman took the two men and hid them. You guys follow me with that. She takes two dudes she's never met before in her life, and she hides them, knowing that they were spies. So you guys, this is kind of what it's like. If you are sitting at home, someone knocks on your door, and they say to you, hey, the FBI's after me. We're actually two Russian spies. Putin sent us over. Can you guys keep us safe for a couple days? You would say, get out of my house, and you call the cops, right? That's not what she does. She says, why not? And she invites him in, but the king finds out about it, and he talks to her. And the woman took the two men and hid them and said thus to the king, there came men unto me, but I wist not whence they were. And it came to pass, she misleads the king. She lies to the king. She says to the king, yeah, these men came to me, but I sent them away. They're out about in the Jordan area. You have to go find them. You can capture them. That's not really what she did. She kept them in her house, and she sent the king on a wild goose chase. But she had brought them up to the roof of her house. In actuality, she brought them up to the roof and hid them and covered the two spies with the stalks of flax. That was customary in their day. They would keep some food up on the top of their roof, and she covered them with those stalks of flax, which she laid in order on the roof. So instead of giving up the Hebrew spies like any other of her countrymen would have done, anybody else would have done this, we would have done this, instead of giving up these two spies, she hides them, misleading the king of the land. She commits treason. She commits treason to hide the two Hebrew spies she didn't know and had just met. And the only reason she does this is because of a few stories she heard about the God of the Hebrews. This is the only reason she does this. Look at this. We already read this, verses 9 and 10. And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord had dried up the water of the Red Sea for you. So this is all she knows. Secondhand knowledge, third-hand knowledge of the God of the Hebrews. Now look at this. When ye came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites, and how the Israelites had already conquered a couple people whom ye utterly destroyed. She heard stories about the God of the Hebrew slaves, and she staked her life. Get this. She staked her life on that God that she had just heard stories about. Rahab had never read any scripture like we do. She had never kept a Sabbath. She had never had a religious teacher. She had no moral superiority. She was a harlot. She had no exemplary life. Refer to the last statement I just made. All she had were a few stories about a Hebrew God. And she put her faith in that God. All she had was some folklore about this God. And she put her faith in that God. There's the mustard seed of faith. There's just a little bit of knowledge about God, and she places her faith in that God. There's the mustard seed that we're talking about. Her faith was birthed not by some great miracle of God or some visit from an angel, but by the secondhand stories of what God had done in the past. Why is she in the hall of faith in Hebrews chapter 11? Because she had a mustard seed of faith, and when she acted on that little bit of faith, she saved not only her whole life, but she saved her family's life, she saved her relatives' life, and she overcame everything that life threw at her. She overcame everything that she was because of this one little mustard seed of faith. So what I'm here to tell you this morning is that with a mustard seed of faith, you can overcome all things in your life, because faith overcomes all things. With the mustard seed of faith, Rahab stood up to the king of the land. She turned her back on her vocation. She had no livelihood after she staked her life on these two Hebrew spies and the God of the Hebrews. She turned her back on her vocation, which she was making. Obviously, she was making good money because this city was historically a very wicked city. She was making good money. She turned her back on her vocation. She turned her back on her own people because she knew that this city was going to be destroyed and that all the people, all the friends that she had were going to be destroyed along with the city. She turned her back on her people. She turned her back on the religion, whatever idolatrous religions that they had in the city. She was turning her back on that religion. She turned her back on her reputation as this person who had, obviously she had made quite a bit of money. She turned her back on her reputation. She turned her back on her culture. Everything that she knew, everything that she was, everything that she had gained in her life, she turned her back on all of that, and she was able to overcome the pull of all that. With the mustard seed of faith, Rahab stood up to the king of the land, and she turned her back on everything. Why? Because faith allows us to overcome all things in our life. I don't know what struggles you have, but faith can overcome those struggles. I don't know what temptation you experience on a daily basis, but your faith in just a mustard seed of faith can overcome those temptations, and it's bigger than those temptations. This world may be pulling you in one direction, but a mustard seed of faith can cause you to win that tug of war with that thing that's pulling on you. A mustard seed of faith can overcome all things in your life. The temptation may seem great, but a mustard seed of faith is greater than that temptation. The things in your life that are bothering you, that are pulling at you, they may seem great, but a mustard seed of faith is greater than those things. A mustard seed of faith can overcome the world. And I don't know about you, but I like seeing big trucks. I don't know if you guys ever like seeing big trucks. I like seeing big trucks, and I like seeing big trucks that can do cool stuff. What I like about big trucks is they can, and especially it's like Jeeps and like cool tricked out trucks, is they can go into like deep water and they can just wade right through the water and they can overcome the pits and the ponds and then they can climb up to these really high rocks and they can climb and traverse these really high rocks. I brought a video with me this morning, just a 49-second video to kind of illustrate to you guys what faith is like and a mustard seed of faith can overcome. Hopefully we have it. There we go. This is a Jeep climbing a hill. It'd be so scary. Look at this last part. Isn't that cool? That is just the coolest thing. Just that one Jeep, it just climbs that wall as if it's not even there. That's what faith does. That's what a mustard seed of faith can do in our life. Sometimes we look at some things in our life and we're like, man, I cannot overcome that thing in my life. That's just a hill. That's a mountain that I cannot get over. That's just a temptation that I'll never get victory over. That's just a pit that's just too deep. That thing in my past is just too big of a hill to get over in my life. God says with a mustard seed of faith, you can climb over that. With a mustard seed of faith, you can overcome that temptation. Like the vehicle that overcomes the rocks, it overcomes the jagged edges and the pits. Faith allows us to overcome the mountains and pits of our life. You see this in 1 John chapter 5. It cannot get any more clear or encouraging than this. For whatsoever is born of God, whoever is a believer in Jesus Christ, whoever is a child of God, overcometh the world. Not some things, not a lot of things, not a few things, overcomes the world. And this is the victory that overcometh the world, even your faith. This is the victory. This is what's going to give you the faith. This is what's going to overcome all things in your life. It's faith. Faith is the victory. When you became a child of God, the moment you trusted Jesus Christ and you had salvation, that first breath you breathed was a breath of victory. Even this morning, if you need a victory, if you need to overcome, faith is the answer. Faith is what you're looking for. If you feel anxiety in your life, faith is the answer to that. Faith, just a mustard seed of faith. Let this encouragement sink into your heart this morning. Jericho, whatever the Jericho is in your life, whatever the walled city is in your life, that Jericho doesn't own you. That Jericho, that walled city doesn't control you. That stress doesn't control you. Whatever your Jericho is, it's not a wall that Jesus can't break. It's not a wall that faith in your life can't overcome. It's not something that's too great for you. Your faith, even just a mustard seed, is bigger than that wall. No Jericho is bigger than your faith. Let this encouragement sink in. Jesus is bigger than your Jericho. You don't need to conform to the temptations or give in to the temptations. You don't need to conform to the priorities that this world wants to place upon your life or that you sometimes find yourself getting into. You don't need to conform to the temptations of this life. It would have been much easier for Rahab to give up the spies. You think about that? It would have been much easier for Rahab to give up the spies, but she didn't conform to the whims of her culture. She didn't conform to the whims of convenience. She didn't conform to the whims of comfort. She didn't bend in the face of these pressures in this life. Rahab didn't conform her life. It would have been much easier for her to give up the two spies. Faith overcomes the world. Faith overcomes all things. It doesn't bend to this world. It doesn't conform to this world. It isn't shaped by this world. Your mustard seed of faith isn't broken by this world. You ever, I don't know if you guys have seen this past year, was one of the funniest things I saw on TV, one of the funniest gaffes I saw on TV all year. So there was a hurricane, I think it was Hurricane Florence in Florida. I could be wrong on that, but it was somewhere on the southern Gulf, the East Coast, and it was bad, right? It was a bad storm. It was a bad hurricane, but it wasn't as bad as people were making it out to be. And so there's this weatherman. I don't know if you guys saw this. This is the video of it. There's this weatherman. He gets on TV, and I don't know if he wanted to make it look cool, like he was really in the thick of the hurricane or what. But as he was reporting in this strong winds of this hurricane, he was making it look, and you guys can look this video up if you think I'm exaggerating. He started standing like this. Like the wind was just so bad, he had to stand like this. Otherwise, he was going to get blown over. I mean, he sold it on the Weather Channel. He sold it real good, making it look like he was just in the eye of this storm and he was going to get blown over any second. He was like, yeah, I'm in the middle of this storm and it's just bad. This storm's horrible. And then in the background, right behind him, not right behind him, maybe like 10, 20 feet behind him, there's these two teenagers with a basketball in their hand, like just walking, like it was no big deal. Like just walking. What had happened was the weatherman, for whatever reason, I'm not going to judge, but for whatever reason, he made it look like the hurricane was stronger than it was. Like he was getting blown over and it was just a tough time. You guys got to look up this video. And the teenagers in the back, they're just walking casually. Winds or no winds, they had the basketball. Look, they were probably playing ball outside somewhere. You know what the world wants to do? The world wants to bend you like that. The world wants to conform you like that. The world wants to make it feel like you're losing. The world wants to make it feel like that temptation you'll never be able to overcome. But God said you can stand tall in the midst of temptation. You can stand tall in the midst of whatever pressures are going on in your life. You can stand tall with just a mustard seed of faith. You can stand tall with just a mustard, with just a little bit of faith. You can stand tall. You don't have to be conformed to this world, as Rahab was not conformed. You see, Romans chapter 12, verse number 2, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. To conform as Rahab could have is no great risk. But she went against the grain. She went upstream, not downstream. She didn't conform herself to the beliefs of the people around her. You see, I love what Charles Spurgeon said. He said, dead fish always float down the stream, but the living fish forces its way against the current. You see, God doesn't want us to be conformed. He wants us to be transformed. We are not meant to be conformed. We're meant to be transformed. This is one of the most important parts of the Christian life. Look at verse number 6 again. But she had brought them up to the roof of the house and hid them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order upon the roof. We look at this, we think, okay, no big deal. What are you talking about here? So what's the story? Rahab places her faith in the God of the Hebrew spies, right? With almost no knowledge of this God, just secondhand, third-hand knowledge of this God. She places her faith in this God. But how do we know she's done that? How do we know that she's placed her faith in the God of the Hebrews? How do we know that she really is trusted in this God? How do we know her allegiance had changed from the God of her city to the God of the Hebrews? Because of the actions she took. Risking her life, Rahab took the two spies and hid them on the roof of her house where she laid the stalks of flax to cover them. Her faith took action. And you always see this inward faith always produces outward action. Inward faith always comes out. Inward faith is always going to be coming out of you. It's always going to be presented. Inward faith produces outward action. If there's faith on the inside, it can't help but come out on the outside. You see this in James chapter 2. Rahab is mentioned again in James chapter 2. You see then how that by works a man is justified and not by faith only. Likewise also, was not Rahab the harlot justified by works when she had received the messengers and had sent them out another way? So what's this saying? This verse can be kind of confusing. When we look at it just at face value, we say, what it says, you see then how that by works a man is justified and not by works only, and not by faith only. So what's it saying here? That we can that we have salvation through faith and works? Is that what this thing's saying? Is that we receive Christ, but we also have to work for it? It's also partially that we have to be justified by our works? No. You have to see what the word justified means. The word justified means shown to be real. So when we read James chapter 2, you see then how that by works, a man's faith is shown to be real, as you could literally read it. You see that how by works, a man's faith is shown to be real and not by faith only. Likewise also, was not Rahab the harlot's faith shown to be real by her works? You see, Rahab's faith was shown to be real when she took action and hid the spies. It's not that salvation is by faith and works. It's that by salvation is by faith alone in Jesus Christ. And that faith is going to present itself. It's going to be shown to be real. It's going to come out. Her faith was shown to be real because of the actions she took, because faith always takes action. The mark of a growing Christian is that their faith turns into footsteps. Is that their faith turns into action. Their faith turns into movement. What actions have you taken in faith? Of all the things you did this past week, how much of that was faith in action? How much of that was, God, I'm trusting you with this. God, I don't know how this is going to work out, but I'm trusting you in it. God, I want to fight this temptation, so I'm trusting you with this. How much of our week this past week was faith in action? How much of it as we come to church is faith in action? How much of our marriage is faith in action? God, I feel angry right now, but I'm going to trust you through this, and I'm not going to show anger. And God, I want to trust you in this situation. God, I'm going to trust you as I'm parenting this week. God, I'm going to trust you as I go to work this week to deal with the things I have to deal with at work. It's faith in action. How often this week have we put faith in action? If you need to see a wall come down in your life, if you need to see the Jericho wall come down in your life, if the active faith of one woman helped bring down the walls of Jericho, what can an active faith do in your life? You see, the problem with many Christians is not that they don't have faith. It's that they have faith that isn't moving. And we can all have that. That's the encouraging thing, is we can all have faith that's moving. I read a story of a man one time who had a headache. And so he thought to himself, I have a headache. I'm going to go to my medicine shelf in my bathroom. I'm going to get myself some Advil. So he goes to the his medicine shelf, this man with the headache. He goes to the medicine shelf, and he looks at this Advil. He reads the instructions. He says, okay, I know if I read the instructions, it's going to take away my headache. I know my doctor has prescribed this particular medicine to me, and I trust my doctor. I believe that if I was to take this medicine, it would cure my headache. It would cure my headache, but it would take my headache away. I trust everything about this. I trust that if I take some water with this one tablet of Advil, I'm going to feel much better. So the man, he reads everything, and he believes that this medicine will heal him of his headache, and he takes that bottle of Advil, and he puts it back on his shelf. He closes the door and he says, I believe everything about that Advil, and I know if I was to take that Advil, I would feel better. But then he walks away not taking the Advil. What's the point? The point is, many times as Christians, many times as believers, we can say to God, we come up to Scripture and say, I believe that. We can come to church, we can hear the preacher say, I believe that. I'm in agreement with that. I trust that. God, I trust you for my salvation. I'm trusting you for, but then we go about our day without any action to back up that faith. Faith can't help until it's active. Faith can't work in your life until it's active. You see, we want God to help us with the bills, and we want God to help us with temptation, and we want God to help us with stress and anxiety and all these, the whole gambit and potpourri of things that we have in our life that we want God to help us with. And we have faith that God will help us with those things, but we have to take action. There has to be movement. There has to be footsteps to our faith. You see in 2 Corinthians 5:7, for we walk by faith, not by sight. What does that word walk mean? It says we live by faith, not by sight. You know what I'm saying? We live by faith. We don't just have faith. We live by it. It's active in our life. Mountain-moving faith is just that, moving. It's active. It's moving. Rahab's faith changed everything because it wasn't confined to a belief. It came out. And look at what it did. Verse number 12, Joshua chapter 2. Now, therefore, I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that ye will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token, and that ye will save alive my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters in all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. And the men answered her, our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. And it shall be, when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. In an even bolder step of faith, Rahab made an agreement with the spies. Since she saved the lives of them, she asked that she and her family be spared from the destruction that was to come. And the spies agreed to it. Then, when the city had been conquered by the Israelites, look what happened between their agreement. Verse number 23. And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab. They were true to their word. And her father, and her mother, and her brethren, and all that she had. And they brought out all her kindred and left them without the camp of Israel. Verse number 25, and Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive, and her father's household, and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. True to their word, the Israelites spared all that Rahab asked and gave her a completely new life in Israel. Because of just a mustard seed of faith, Rahab wasn't just able to overcome everything in her life, but she was able to rewrite her future. Do you know what kind of woman Rahab would have been if she stayed in Jericho? She would have died with the rest of them. She would have died as a harlot. Her family would have died. But because of the mustard seed of faith that she showed, after knowing just a little about the God of the Hebrews, that mustard seed of faith rewrote her entire future. It rewrote everything about her life. It rewrote the future of her family, of her brethren, of her father and her mother, her entire household. All of their futures were completely different because of that little mustard seed of faith. Because faith doesn't just overcome the things in your life. It actually rewrites the history of your life. It rewrites the future of who you are to be. True to their word, the Israelites spared these people. Her entire future was rewritten because she placed her faith not in the walls of Jericho, but in the God of the Hebrews. Faith gives God access to rewrite your future. Faith allows God to change our direction and our destination so that our future is completely different than it would have been. And we know this to be true because we've seen people who have trusted Jesus Christ and their future is completely different than their past used to be. Their future is looking completely different than their present is. You see this all the time with a newborn Christian. Things become different. Things change. Their life has become new, as the Bible says, and their future is different. You know that she would go on? She would go on. And remember, she was a harlot. This is someone who is you know what a harlot is. Someone who is a woman in life. She's a prostitute, basically. She was a harlot. She would go on to have children. She would go on to have a husband. She would go on to have a happy family of her own. She would have never had that had she stayed in Jericho. She would have never had that had she trusted in the walls. But because she trusted in the God of the Hebrew with just a little bit of faith, she rewrote her entire history, and not just her own history. Do you know that in Matthew chapter 1, verse number 5, she goes on to be one of the ancestors of Jesus Christ? You can see this. Matthew chapter 1, verse number 5, you can look this up. It says that Salmon begat Obed, who begat Rahab. And Rahab, after down the line, beget Jesus on Joseph's side. This is an amazing thing. Someone with this kind of past was an ancestor of Jesus Christ. A mustard seed of faith can do that. A mustard seed of faith in your life can rewrite the entire history, can rewrite the entire future of your children and your children's children. Through faith, God can change your direction and destination. You know, if you ever, it's just like changing a destination that you wanted to go to. If you wanted to go to Ontario, Canada, you're going to pack a certain way. You're going to get certain clothes. You're going to get a big jacket if you wanted to go to Canada. You're going to get ready for a long, long drive. You're going to get snacks. You're going to get all sorts of goodies. You're going to fill up your tank of gas. You're going to tune up your car if you're going to go to take a drive to Ontario, Canada. But if you change the direction and the destination, say instead of Ontario, Canada, you change it to Tijuana, Mexico, you're going to do some things very differently. instead of packing a big parka, you're probably going to pack a Kevlar vest. Instead of packing certain things, because your direction and your destination has changed, everything else has changed. Everything else has changed along with it. You're not gonna have to pack as much. You go to Tijuana. You're going to get ready for some sun. You're going to get ready for some good tacos. You're going to get ready for some good food. As you go to Ontario, Canada, things change. What I'm trying to say here is that faith, when I have a mustard seed of faith and I put that faith into action, I put that faith into footsteps, and I put movement into that faith, it's going to change the direction of where I was going to where I can go, the direction God wants me to go. And when I go the direction God wants me to go, He's going to make my future a lot better than I could have ever made it. He's going to give me the destination that I've always wanted to have, but I didn't think that He could give me. This is an amazing story that has everything to do with our story. When you activate your faith, you can overcome your past and rewrite your future. Who you were is not who you have to be. Who you are right now is not who you have to be in the future. Just as Rahab was surrounded by the walls of Jericho, we were surrounded by the walls of our sin. And just as Rahab was delivered from the walls of Jericho, we were also delivered by the walls of our sin when Jesus Christ came to earth and He died for us on the cross. He delivered us from the walls of our sin so that we are no longer stuck in a land, we no longer have the spiritual state of decay and destruction and judgment. But because of Jesus, we have the spiritual state of freedom, of a rewritten future and a rewritten spiritual destination and a rewritten spiritual direction in our life because of what Jesus has done for us. Rahab's faith rewrote her future and gave her a new life. So it is that our future has been rewritten in heaven and we have a new life in Jesus Christ. You see, Rahab is a picture of the human heart. And it's the blood of Jesus that breaks the wall that keeps us from God. You see, Rahab is a picture of the human heart. We are all in our default state, separated from God by a wall of sin. Just as Rahab was. And Jesus came to us just as those two spies. And faith in Jesus, just as Rahab had faith in the God of the Hebrews through those two spies, faith in Jesus will allow us to stave off the judgment and destruction and give us new life. You know how the Israelites knew which house was Rahab's? You think the whole city is destroyed, yet Rahab's is not. How did they know it was Rahab's? Could have been anybody's. How do they know it's Rahab's? Look at this. Joshua chapter 2, verse number 18. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window which thou didst let us down by. And thou shalt bring thy father and the mother and thy brethren, all thy father's household, home unto thee. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him. So this is what they say. This is how you're going to distinguish your house from everybody else's house. What you're going to do is you're going to get yourself a scarlet thread. It means a rope or a scarf. You're going to get yourself a scarlet. And this is the closest I could get to scarlet. This is a scarlet thread. You're going to put this on the outside of your window. And you're going to let this hang there so that when we come to destroy the city and when we come with the power of the God of the Hebrews to level the walls of Jericho, this is going to be the marker for us. This is going to be the symbol for us, the representation that you have faith and that we aren't to destroy your house. Rahab was to drape a scarlet-colored scarf over her window to indicate that she was to be saved from destruction. It can't get any more clear than this. A scarlet thread. This is a picture of Jesus Christ. This is a picture of the Passover lamb. You remember the Passover in the Old Testament? The Passover was when the Egyptians had the Israelites and the Hebrews in slavery to the Egyptians and to the Pharaoh. What God told the Israelites to do was to take a lamb and to kill that lamb. And with the blood of that lamb that they had killed, to take that blood and to wipe it on the doorpost of their house. And when the angel of death came that evening, he would see the blood on the doorpost of that house, maybe the window of that house. And that angel of death would pass over that house. That was a picture of the Jesus that would come, the Jesus to come, the Messiah that would come. He would come and he would be broken. His blood would be shed and his blood would be spilt. And that blood on the cross would cover our sin. And so we come to this story of Rahab, and they tell her the color of all colors they could have picked. They say the scarlet, the red, the scarf that's covered, that's colored as blood would be colored. Put that scarf outside of your window as an indication that you're to be spared, that you're to be passed over from the judgment. You see, this is a picture of Jesus Christ. At Passover, the Hebrews killed a lamb, and on the cross, Jesus' blood was shed so that it could cover our sinfulness, the sinfulness of our heart. You see this in 1 Peter chapter 1. For as much as ye know that ye were not redeemed, you weren't redeemed. You weren't saved with corruptible things as silver and gold. You weren't redeemed with your own works from your vain conversation received by traditions from your fathers. But you were redeemed with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb. All three of these pictures come together without blemish and without spot. From the Passover to the crucifixion, throughout Scripture, scarlet is the color of redemption. Red is the color of redemption to our soul. We are Rahab, and Jesus is the scarlet thread that we claim for salvation. And like Rahab, all it takes is a mustard seed of faith to claim that. All it takes is a mustard seed of faith to claim that salvation. It's about activating what faith we do have. Oh, hear me out this morning. It's not about how much faith you have. You may say, I don't have that much faith. It's not about how much faith you have. It's about what you do with the faith you do have. That mustard seed of faith, put that in action. It is not the strength of your faith, but the object of your faith that actually saves you, as Tim Keller says. You see, strong faith in a weak branch is fatally inferior to weak faith in a strong branch. I can have faith as a mustard seed, weak faith, but if it's in the right thing, that's okay. As long as I have the mustard seed of faith in Jesus Christ, that's what makes the difference. That's what we're here to tell you this morning. That's why I want to encourage you, put your faith in action. We have been redeemed by Jesus Christ because of his blood that's been shed for us. Now let's put that faith in action. Heard the story of an old story of a man who back in the day, he did tightrope walking. And so he did this all over France. He would put a tightrope across two buildings, very high buildings, and he would walk across that tightrope. And he would progressively get better at what he did. So the first time, he'd just walk across the tightrope, maybe across a space where you would die if you fell. And then he started to do it blindfolded. And then he started to do it blindfolded with a wheelbarrow. And there was a man who heard about him, and he wrote a letter to this tightrope walker, and he said to him, this is really interesting what you do, and I'm pretty impressed by it, and I think everyone else is, but I don't believe you can do it, but I'm willing to make you an offer. For a very substantial amount of money, I'll pay for all your transportation fees, I would like to challenge you to do your act over Niagara Falls. Instead of being in Paris and France, all that, come over to America, come over to Niagara Falls. I want to see you do your act over Niagara Falls. And this is what the man said. He said, I'll do it, I'll come over. And so they set up the event, and this tightrope walker, he had never come to America before, he had never seen Niagara Falls before, but he set a tightrope across Niagara Falls, and he started on the Canadian side, and he was going to walk over to the American side. And so he started walking over. As the drums rolled, he started to walk over to the American side all the way across, and he did it with a blindfold on and with a wheelbarrow. And so the man that had written him the letter, he was standing right at the edge where the tightrope walker would come across when he came across to the other side. And the man said to the tightrope walker, now I believe you can do it. And the tightrope walker said, he asked him, do you believe I can do it? The man said, of course I believe you can do it. I just watched you do it. The man said, no. Do you believe I can do it? And said, of course I believe you can do it. I just watched you. The man said, no. Tightrope walker said, no. Do you believe that I can do it? The man said, yes, of course I do. And the tightrope walker said, then get in my wheelbarrow. And he did. You see how that faith alone you can have. But faith in action allows you to overcome things you never could have overcome before. Faith in action allows God to rewrite your future in a way that you could have never done. When we simply take that faith and say, I believe you could do it, but I'm going to get in the wheelbarrow. I believe you can do it. I'm going to let you destroy the Jericho in my life. That's what we need to decide this morning. Will we let God do that with our mustard seed of faith?